The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Track with Hinch and Rossi.
Happy Thursday, everyone. It's Off Track with Hinch and Rossi. We are back. You listened to us on someone else's podcast last week, but we're back to our normal format of James and I delivering beautiful information and keeping you up to date on racing, and Tim just detracting from it all. So,
you know, the irony is hi, on James. Somebody else's podcast last week, I actually had to edit more.
What's not ironic is on someone else's podcast, James still couldn't log in.
I logged in, but I was frozen for a very long time, and then I did nothing, and it magically fixed itself. Technology's weird.
And that was the only embarrassing thing that happened on that podcast.
Sure, well, so yeah, I was really glad. I hope that some of you listened to our podcast last week, where the three of us were very graciously hosted by Mark Gillespie of WhiskeyCast, and we got to go on for a second time. And to do this show, Mark ahead of time sends out some whiskey samples, and we sample them together on the show. It's a beautiful concept and very generous of him to have us on again. And he sends out four samples. Now, these samples come in either 2 or 3 ounce bottles, and they're full. Like he fills them to a reasonable amount. And anybody knows anything about
full of bourbon?
Full of bourbon, like 40 plus.
Well, one was a scotch.
One was a scotch, full of whiskey, 40%+ alcohol content. And anybody that knows anything about tasting alcohol, and Tim, I know you do because we've been on wine tours together, you're supposed to sip it, you know, and just sort of, you don't have to finish everything.
So I didn't know that.
So the fact that you... Even if you thought that's what you were supposed to do, he can't see you. Like, you're on it. Like, he can see you. We can't see how much you poured. You can hide where the bottles are. You're not going to offend him if they're not.
Well, I wanted to fully taste everything.
In an hour, you drank 11 ounces of whiskey. That is insanity.
So he was over at my house and, you know, come down. And keep in mind, we did the podcast before dinner. And he was like, I was like, oh, do you want to have a drink? And he was like, I think I need a beer. Like, I'm pretty drunk from the whiskey tasting. And
I was hammered. I didn't understand how nobody else was.
I thought that's weird. But like, I guess he hadn't eaten today and all that stuff. So like, whatever. So fine. So he had a beer. Like, let me be clear. He didn't turn down a drink. He just had a beer and then had dinner. And then we carry on with the rest of the night. And, you know, whatever happens. And then the next morning he comes down and he's like, man, I really don't feel good today. And I was like, I actually feel pretty good. Like, I feel like we kind of, you know, drank the same amount and stuff and whatever. And we keep talking and he was like, oh, I need to bring down those bottles so you can throw them in the dishwasher. And I was like, what, like you took a glass upstairs? He's like, no, the bottles from the podcast. And I said, oh, did you pour them out? No.
Into my glass.
So I was like, wait, you drank all of them. Sure did. And then I proceeded to show him mine, which had maybe a 16th of the liquor.
Yeah. From them. Like, I'm looking at mine, and even the one I liked the most, I didn't even do a second pour. Like, they're all basically, you could do conservatively 4 more tastings out of the bottle that I have. Like, the bottle.
Again, I've never gone whiskey tasting before. I didn't know this. I just thought.
Yeah, but you're an adult.
But you know
liquor.
Yeah.
It got into the. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, man, this is a lot to drink right now. How is everybody else keeping it together?
Now, this is a great point. You mentioned the editing. I'm going to admit, I did not listen to Tim's version of our podcast.
Oh, I was clearly sloshed at the end.
But did you cut out the point where you said, I don't know, Mark, I'm pretty drunk. I've had three whiskeys.
I think I left that in.
Yeah, okay, good, good.
Yeah, I mean, there were signs, surely there. I don't know. In retrespect, it seems obvious. But he's like, okay, go ahead and pour it. Have it. It all fit in the glen.
Hold on. This was the second time we've done this.
Oh, I absolutely did it the first time, too. Yeah, no, I was... like, and here's the thing. I was looking at you guys just shocked that you were keeping it together.
Well, we're professionals.
Professional whiskey drinkers.
Dude, we should have told him. No, Alex, we should have just gone along with it. It's been like, yeah, no, we finished ours, too. Totally fine.
Yeah,
it was.
Let's have some more.
Yeah,
the commitment though to Tim and still like wanting to party for the rest of the night was phenomenal.
Guys, like, I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna do it again if we go a third time.
I mean, to be fair, once you're that drunk, all you want to do is party and keep going. Like that's put him right in that perfect zone of just saying, "Let's go."
I was just so impressed that I was watching you guys. I was just like, man, their tolerance is way higher than mine because I was sloshed.
Sure isn't. You're actually quite present.
To be fair, I had a healthy buzz after the sips that I had because, again, it was before dinner.
You know, the funny thing is I actually, like, this time I was like, man, I'm doing a lot better on this one. Like, I'm actually, like, I can taste the differences. I'm doing, like, good notes. And then I listened back through it. And I'm just like, listen here, Mark. I'd say it's the cinnamon. And
Now knowing this, I want to go back and listen to the first one and see what you sounded like at the end of the first one.
Do you think Mark knows this?
I mean, he'll know now. Sorry, yeah, Mark.
That's true. That's
again,
true.
Mark, I want to stress this. I honestly thought that's what we were supposed to do. It fit in the Glencairn. I thought that was...
Mark, if you're listening and you have, for whatever reason, the urge to invite us back on the show... make sure to send Thim 1 ounce bottles.
I'll just get a thimble.
Yeah, just a
four
thimble
thimbles in the mail.
Of whiskey. That's all he needs.
That was good.
Anyway, that was fun. Hopefully we do get to do it again.
Since we've talked about that, you know, which is really a revelation of information. big racing news today. James is signed, so like surprise. Woo.
Yeah,
shocker. Are you gonna elaborate us on what color your car is gonna be? Because I think
it's gonna be orange.
Oh.
For 10 races it's gonna be orange.
Sure is.
And then for other races it's gonna be other colors that I cannot yet discuss, but I'm very excited to at a future date talk about.
But I think on February 18th.
Yeah.
Talk about it. Because they tweeted about it.
They sure did.
No, but in all seriousness, man, I congrats. I know.
Thank you, buddy.
I know how horrible it is to go through the holiday season with things pending and up in the air. And even if you're 99% sure of what's going to happen until it's actually announced to the internet, it sucks.
Yeah. Once it's on Instagram, it's official.
I mean, totally.
No. I appreciate that. Yes. Today, Tuesday, obviously this is being released on Thursday, but a few days ago, if you're listening, we announced full season ride with Andretti Autosport in the 29. Genesis is going to be the primary for 10 of those races, which is just awesome. I mean, for a company that had never been in motorsports to go from an Instagram direct message to a 3-race deal 2 months later to title sponsoring the Texas race a month later, to littering Indianapolis with advertising and activation 2 months later, to now, you know, 6 months later, have a 10 race program. It shows what an incredible organization it is, you know, and the faith they have in Andretti Autosport and myself and the program and IndyCar and everything. And I'm just excited to go racing, guys. Let's giddy up. Let's go do some stuff. Now, I don't get to go racing as soon as Alex gets to go racing, though.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. By the time this gets released, you'll be in Daytona, right?
You'll be in sweaty Florida.
I will be. Yeah.
But hold on. Before we talk about your Daytona test, because you've just done the Roar and the qualifying race and the grid is set for the 24-hour race. But the other week, you had a very interesting test day down in Florida, a bit unique. that I think you should tell the people about.
Yeah. So I tested IndyCar at Sebring on the short course. And then I also tested the Acura DPI car on the other short course, which was very confusing for me. In all the kind of lead up is talking to Wayne Taylor Racing and getting this deal together and everything. They had sent me dates in the beginning. And I always just assumed the January 19th date was just a typo because I knew that IndyCar was testing on January 19th in Sebring. So I was like, oh, surely like that's their travel day and they're going to test on the 20th or whatever. And so like I just said, yeah, all the dates are fine. And then I was, we were through the new year or just getting to the new year and they were like asking for travel arrangements. And I was like, oh, I'm already going to be there. And they were like, why?
Are you serious? So you didn't actually know this wasn't like a super planned ahead of time thing? You were supposed to be doing the full test day with Wayne Taylor?
Correct. Yes, sure was. And so kind of was a little bit of an awkward conversation.
I was say, how does that conversation go? So well, you can call both Wayne and Michael and be like, hey.
Well, so calling Wayne is much easier than calling Michael because in the contract, you know, IndyCar takes priority and precedence on any type of conflicts or whatever. So he totally understood. And quite frankly, it was just a shakedown for them. They had never run the Acura on track before. It wasn't really a test. The car
you had
was
more
in,
experience with the Acura than they did at that.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And they wanted to get Felipe Albuquerque in the car. Who he was new to the program and the car is in full like Daytona spec. So like, it's not a Sebring test as it were. But still, you know, I had to call Michael and I was like, so you know how I said, you know, IndyCar takes priority on everything. Well, how would you feel if, I also was kind of doing double duty during the Sebring test and as Andretti Autosport always is, they were totally fine with it and understood. But I was talking to my engineer and I was like, okay, so can we come up with like a plan of when like you think I can go over there? Do we have a plan diff change or weight distribution change or something that's going to take a while? And he was like, I'll give you 1 to 1:30.
That's it? I was a like, half hour?
I was like, oh, okay. So what that meant was I had to be up at 6 a.m. because they wanted to do a lot of driver change practice and everything. And green flag was at 8. So I went over to the IMSA side, did driver change practice, did the whole team meeting and everything. Then went back to the IndyCar, tested the IndyCar up until lunch, had a quick bite, went over to the DPI car and drove that from like 12:45 to 1:30. And so here's the kicker. Like everything was fine. The car performed great. The last time I drove a DPI car, was at Sebring. So like it came back quite quickly. But I have never driven on the right short course, like the short course that involves turn one and turn 17. I'd only driven the IndyCar one. Well, I just hopped in the car. Like I didn't do any track walk. I didn't do any.
And you get to where all of a sudden there's barriers where there should be racetrack and panicked.
So turn one's quite a fast corner, right?
A very fast corner.
Right. So I was, you know, and this is my first day in the car and like, not my first day in the car, my first day with the team. And like, you know how it is. Like you want to go out and show that you can get up to speed quick and everything. So like the car was good. Like I, on the outlap, it was good. The tires come up to temp quite quick in that car. And so out of 17, I was on it into turn one and like drop it down a gear fifth flat, like at the apex and like tracking out. And it wasn't until I got to the exit curb where I was like, oh my God, I have no idea where I'm going.
I have to go right really soon here.
So did I flat spot a set of tires on lap one? Sure
maybe,
did.
Maybe.
Yeah, I did do that.
I'm just glad to see that you had the same problems in a real car that I have in iRacing. It's just like, okay, I'm just going to eyeball this. I'm just going
It was one of the most terrifying experiences because like that corner, you can't really see it because it's kind of, it's super flat. And anyways, so that was my DPI experience. I came in, we did a new set of tires and did everything else. And the car shook down really well. And then just went back to the IndyCar. But one thing that I think you'll find quite interesting, James, is so you know how kind of whatever you're driving at the time, it feels fast, right? Whether in reality, it is fast or not. It feels fast.
Yeah.
And so a DPI car is like
quick.
A pretty impressive piece of machinery. And, you know, behind a P1 car and an F1 car and an Indy car, it's probably one of the next quickest things on a racetrack. And so you kind of get into that rhythm, even if it's 10 laps. And then I left and ran over to the Indy car and literally jumped in within like the space of 6 or 7 minutes. And even on the Sebring short course, it is unbelievable how much faster an Indy car is.
Really?
Like you don't really feel it once you've been in an Indy car for a while, right? And that's all you drive. Like it kind of feels a little slow. But when you get out of one pretty high performance vehicle and get into another one, like I almost had to relearn how to brake.
I think that's part of it though, right? It's because in your brain, you're getting out of a really fast car and then you're getting into another car. So you're like, yeah, I mean, this is also a fast car, but the difference shouldn't be that. If you had been pounding around in like an MX5 cup car and then jumped in the Indy car, yes, your brain would be ready for like a very big difference in speed.
Right. But
you probably weren't ready for that kind of jump because you're like, yeah, I'm getting out of a super fast car and getting back into an Indy car, but...
Well, it's not only that, but it's also like, it is a big jump, but it's also not. So like, you're talking about, oh, what was just really on the limit of the brakes, like now 35 feet later is really on the limit.
Right.
So you're working in such small tolerances. It was really interesting. So, I mean, in all honesty, it took me like 4 or 5 laps to like get back to anything decent.
Yeah.
Sebring, and I was really... Like I was gonna stay out there until I got back down to a lap time because I didn't want to come in being like 8/10 off of where I was.
Right.
And they'd be like, "Oh, that was a mistake."
Yeah, never allowed to do that again. Yeah.
Exactly. So
that's funny. All right.
Anyways, so then
you got there. You guys qualified 5th, and then were sent to the back for the qualifying race. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, it was real tough. You know, qualify 5th and then get dropped to the back, so we had to start 7th.
And then finished 5th. So you're starting right where you should have started.
Yeah. Right. Funny how that works out. So yeah. So in all honesty, it's a completely new car for Wayne Taylor. It's got a little bit more idiosyncrasies than the Dallara and the Cadillac that they were used to, and just I guess this car settles a little bit more. So they were a slight miscalc. It wasn't even a miscalculation. Like literally the rear wing just settled. Like you can't even adjust this part of the wing that didn't pass. So anyways, a little disappointing, but ultimately didn't make a huge difference. You know, I think as always, the DPI field's going to be very competitive, very close, and it's anyone's race over 24 hours. Like it's going to be very interesting. I mean, the 31 car also got disqualified for being underweight, and they won that little sprint qualifying race pretty easily. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are going to have to go our way as always, but yeah, feel good about it.
So that starts this Saturday, right? At what time does the race start?
3:40.
Yeah. I don't know why they moved it back. 11. And now, yeah, 3:40 just makes for a long, long 2 days. Because think about it, you still get up. You're a mechanic or a driver. You're probably still up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, you're not
on
sleeping.
Saturday. Right. Getting ready, all the prep. And then you do a 24-hour race. And that 3:40 on Sunday, the race finishes. And then you got to tear down and pack up and travel home. Like
I get to travel to Sebring to test an IndyCar on Monday.
Yes, but, that's true.
So the worst part about it is usually when the sun's coming up, you can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel. You know, there's usually like 5 hours to go.
Right.
Well, now there's 9.
Yeah, that's the worst. It's just the worst.
Yeah, that's not great. I'm not looking forward to that part.
Yeah.
So anyways, I'm thrilled to be doing it though. Great to be back with Acura. Very exciting news out of the Acura camp today being Tuesday, announcing their commitment to LMDH in 2023, which is great news for sports car racing in general. So
for sure.
Exciting time.
For sure. Well, as mentioned earlier, we have a special guest. Did we mention earlier that we had a special guest?
We didn't, but
I don't think we mentioned it.
You just mentioned it.
Although James, didn't you have something you wanted to talk about today? Very racing related?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that on the tail end of the show after we chat to our guests.
Got it.
That'll be our lead out of the show because I'm really confused by this. But Alex, we've got a special guest. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Mr. John Norman?
Yeah, so I got to know John Norman when his son Ryan competed in Indy Lights for Andretti Autosport. And my dad became friends with John and bonding over racing dad stories and life and stuff like that. And John has a very exciting company to help young athletes further their careers. Very much based in the motorsport community, but also outside of that as well. So a lot of cool information that he's going to share with us and introducing us to his new exciting company, Evo. So yeah, we're going to lead right into that. All right, guys. So I know in the past on this podcast, we've talked a lot about kind of, you know, my start in racing, James's start in racing and kind of the trials and tribulations of getting to the top level of motorsports. And one of the things that we always kind of touched on was kind of the business side of it and how challenging it is, especially in motorsports, kind of with the cost to play and just how much it is to kind of go from karting to Formula cars and hopefully to the top level. I mean, it takes a lot of people. It takes a lot of support and whether that comes from, you know, teams or personal family resources or corporate sponsorships or whatever.
Whatever you find under the couch, cushions.
Whatever you find under the couch, lottery tickets. you got to pay for it somehow. And so I was fortunate enough that my dad, as we talked about on this podcast, kind of came up with an investment program and something to where people could buy units and hopefully I would make it to the big leagues one day and they could actually get a return on their investment and make some money. Well, we have a guest today who has kind of taken that idea and brought it to a whole new level of, you know, helping young athletes, you know, achieve and get to the highest level of sports without necessarily the personal finances to do it. So we've got someone who's very close to the Andretti Autosport family, John Norman. His son Ryan raced for Andretti and Indy Lights. He's currently racing down in Daytona. He'll be racing with me this weekend in the LMP3 class. So welcome, John. And
hello there.
Thanks for being here.
Like clockwork here. UPS shows up at the door and the dogs go crazy.
It's par for the course on this podcast.
If you didn't have dogs barking, then we'd actually be disappointed.
Yeah.
Mine's asleep right there. So.
so John, I kind of led in a little bit to what you do, but you have a company, a business called Evo, that helps young professionals kind of get to the top level of sports through a kind of crowdsourcing way, if I'm not mistaken. So why don't you explain that to us?
Yeah, allow me to explain. Well, actually, on Thursday, we are launching Evo, which is short for Evolution Development Group, to the public, which it's basically, we open up investment in Evo to the general public, and for as little as $150, a fan can invest in our company, and then we are going to go out and scout and sign the best athletes and drivers that are struggling to make it. And we're going to support those drivers not only with funding, but most importantly with a development program that is going to help them physically, mentally, compete at the highest level of their sport.
You talk about kind of finding these drivers or athletes or what have you. Is it something that there's a process that they have to go through, or can anyone kind of become a part of the Evo family, or are you scouting them out yourself? How does that work?
No, so right now we have a partnership with Andretti and we have a relationship with Jay Howard. And of course, within racing, as we know, in open wheel racing, there's a ladder system with the Road to Indy. The thing that's unique about there is, you know, these drivers that maybe won the championship and they get, a dollar amount to go on to the next level. The amount that they get doesn't even really cover the amount of what it takes for the budget for the next series. But a lot of times it might not be the best driver that won that series. As we know, in the lower series, there's a lot of crashes. There's a lot of problems that happen.
Sure.
And so it might be that like the second or third best that came in Indy Pro 2000 is really the diamond in the rough and needs the support. And instead of having to, you know, go away and do something else, we would be there saying, hey, let's come in to do a test and test you against some of the better drivers. And we would then decide whether or not they are right for our program. And the idea would then be to provide them with the funding and, most importantly, a lot of testing, which everybody knows seat time is the key to developing a driver. So we're not out there looking for somebody that's never been in a race car. We're out there looking at drivers that are possibly falling off the series because they can't afford it. And we're going to go and test those athletes. And even also in the Indy Lights series as well. Because at the end of the day, our investors ultimately want a return on their investment, just like you were mentioning before about the people that were invested in you. So we want to get drivers that will have the quickest chance of becoming a top contender in the IndyCar series.
Yeah, you want a fast maturation, right? But it's not even just motorsports. I mean, we were talking, you know, just before we started recording here about some of the other sports that you're looking into, and, you know,
podcasting.
Other sports cost. Yeah. Well, I mean, if we want to call that, no, because if we call that a sport, that would make you an athlete, and I don't well, endorse that
and
at
even
all.
If we called it a sport, Tim, you wouldn't be selected.
I was going to say, if we called it a sport, I'd quit.
You'd be not essential. But no, but so like, you know, you think obviously racing sort of sets the standard for outrageously expensive sports to get into,
right?
But to be successful at almost any sport, it still takes a decent amount of funding. And I remember I was at a charity golf tournament. It seems like forever ago now. It's probably a year ago or so. And the caddy was a young guy that was, you know, trying to make it pro, trying to get his pro card. And he talked about how you need sponsors to play in the right tournaments and afford the coaching and this, that, and the other. So even getting into a sport like golf can sometimes be inhibited by the fact that you don't have enough money to get what you need or play the tournaments that you need. So it applies to a bunch of different sports.
Yeah, yes, it does. Alex, you mentioned before when we spoke that rather than spending all your time or a lot of your time worrying about raising money and meeting the next possible investor, if you knew that you didn't have to do that and you could spend 100% of your time practicing, you would absolutely feel that you would get better and be a better athlete at that point. So we're taking that same approach here. We with Evo, we have professional golf, we have motorsports, and we have MMA and combat sports. And those are the three sports that we thought that we would start out with. And to develop a golfer and to give them the premier training and the technology that's there for a golfer, they're competing with people that have all that. So if they're only competing at 80% of their capacity, but they're trying to get onto a tour that these guys are playing at 100%, it's really difficult. So what we've done is we've developed these programs for the different sports, and we have the performance trainers that are going to work across everybody. And it's going to be really exciting. The fun part is the fans get to come along for the ride. and they get to see what our athletes are doing to train and to get better. And even they'll have the opportunity to make suggestions to our athletes.
So I was actually going to ask about that. So Alex, are you invested in this?
I am not.
No. Okay. So if a driver, hypothetically, if you were and you were a sponsor and somebody else on the grid, could you just be like, hey, it's your sponsor, get over, let me through, you know, like maybe that's worth putting like 150.
Could you imagine? Yeah, I'm going to throw 150 bucks to Scott Dixon's future and be like, technically I'm your boss. You have to move.
I don't think you want to invest in his future. That guy's not going anywhere.
Yeah, that guy, what's he going to do? So while we're on this topic, John, and I want to get back to kind of the development at one point, but the money side of it. So obviously, you know, people are going to want to do this, not always out of the kindness of their own hearts, right? They're looking at the potential return for someone they believe in, and they believe that they can get there. So you mentioned that it's the cost to kind of be involved is $150.
Yeah.
For, I guess, one unit or one. For
that. Well, the minimum investment is $150. Obviously,
okay.
You can put in as much as you'd like.
And are you investing, do you get to choose the athlete you're investing in, or are you just investing in the company? And then if any athlete gets there,
yes,
you get some of that.
Okay. So you're not investing in a specific athlete. Think of this as a mutual fund, whether it's a Fidelity mutual fund and they have 40 companies that they're invested in. You don't have to go in and invest in, oh, I want to pick that company out of your mutual fund. So the great thing here is, as we know, let's say in the past, only wealthy people could really invest and get in on the ground floor of investing in a professional athlete. Here, we're making it accessible for the ordinary fan, let's say. And at the end, they're benefiting for all our athletes, not just one athlete. So if that one athlete that they really like, let's say for instance, gets hurt or something, they don't lose their money. They're still invested in the entire company.
Well, that makes it, much more attractive, right? Because we all know kind of the challenges that let's use racing as an example. You know, there's 24 to 33 seats every single year. And there's hundreds of drivers that are hoping to be IndyCar drivers or sports car drivers or whatever. I mean, paid professional drivers, it's probably under 100 in the United States or just that. So the fact that people are able to be involved, but also have a little bit of reassurance that the odds are a little bit in their favor, instead of just having to pick kind of one horse in the race. So I think it's a very, very good way of going about it. And I think that especially with that kind of cost of entry, I mean, I could think of most IndyCar fans in my mind would be interested. What do you say, James?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's to kind of have that vested interest. You know, it's a lot of people talk about how part of the reason why betting is so popular is because it gives you something to really cheer for. Well, I mean, it's hard for you.
Yeah,
you're particularly really bad at it, but no, it gives you that vested interest in something. And so to do this, you're going to follow sports you might not follow. And those athletes will get, let's say you sign up originally because you're a racing fan, but if you put that money in, you're going to be starting to follow that golfer that's part of the program and that MMA fighter that's part of the program. So it's really, really good. Now, John, so it's launching on Thursday, which is also the same day that this podcast will be broadcast. So it's launching today for all intents and purposes. So I'm a fan. How do I sign up? Where do I go? Where can I read a bit more about it? And where can I give you my money? I want to give you my money. How do I do it?
Well, we made that very easy. You go to
That's the way to do it.
We go to Evo Invest. So evoinvest.com. And you go on there, you'll see the video that explains the process, explains the company. It answers all your questions, I believe, in regards to how to invest. You click on the button that says invest now. It takes you to a next page, and it's just like you're going and ordering something on Amazon. You put in your credit card information, the number of shares you want to buy, and then you hit complete, and that starts the process, and you eventually get access to a place to see your electronic shares.
Except unlike Amazon, instead of it arriving tomorrow, what you ordered, it could be a couple of years, but no, it's, I think it's brilliant. It's, you know, we've seen the success of kind of, I'm drawing a blank on them now, but all of these crowdsourcing type sites to get products off the ground.
GoFundMe.
It's a huge GoFundMe. Exactly. It's a huge area that motorsports, you know, I think the US does it the best in terms of the Road to Indy ladder, but quite frankly, like, it's still not enough. And that's through no fault of Road to Indy. It's just motorsports is a hugely expensive sport. So it seems that you're really filling that gap, you know, in a positive way, in an easy to use and easy to understand way. And that's amazing. So I'm thrilled to see that, you know, hopefully we're going to have drivers get the opportunity that maybe never would have. And I've always said that the best race car driver in the world is probably someone driving a taxi in New York
City. Yeah, might have never driven a race car ever.
Exactly, because it just wasn't there. So you're providing these people potentially with an opportunity, and that's something to be very excited and proud about. And we can't wait to see where this goes. So thanks for sharing it with us.
Unless they're like really good, then we don't want it to happen.
Right. Well, yeah, then, like, can you make sure I'm done with IndyCar by the time you find that guy?
Like you said before, Alex, you said people want to watch exciting races. They don't want to have a lot of difference between the best and the worst. So, you know, if we can bring in a group of drivers that are just, you know, fantastic, it's going to make it even more exciting.
Oh, it's great for the sport, great for the show, and
bad for us.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, bad for us, but you know, whatever. Great for everyone else.
But when one of the Evo drivers puts one of us out of a job, can we like reapply to be an Evo driver and get
smart? Yeah, that's forward thinking.
Yes,
no, just invest in Evo, and then it's win-win.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. It's like when Jeff Gordon owned half of Jimmy Johnson's car. Jimmy Johnson showed up and won like 7 championships. He's like, I'm mad. I'm not winning, but I'm also like not that mad because I'm making a bunch of money.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, thanks again, John. And congrats on Evo, and we can't wait to see where this goes, and looking forward to competing against Evo drivers here very soon.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's such a great concept. You know, I mean, you see, as you mentioned in the interview, GoFundMe and like that kind of concept has helped launch, you know, countless companies that have gone on to be profitable and successful. And
You got now, my pizza oven off of GoFundMe.
There you go. There you go. And so, by the way, I really want pizza soon. Can we get on that?
I mean, I've got all the pizza making ingredients.
Have you unpacked it yet?
Sure. Haven't.
James, are we just buying him stuff that we're going to use when we're at his house? Because I just bought him a popcorn machine.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Keep it coming, guys. No skin off my back.
As long as you don't mind hosting, this is a great setup. but no, yeah. So it's cool. It's a cool way for fans to engage, and a cool way to help young athletes. Speaking of athletes, you're gonna look back. I want you to remember me saying that because you're gonna look back on that segue and realize that it's totally inappropriate.
Are we talking about Tim now?
No. Well, yeah, it's podcasting a sport. I was chatting with a friend of mine earlier today, and it doesn't really matter why, but
I'm going to be honest here before I know what you're talking about. I'm going to need to know the why.
It doesn't really matter why, but shake weights came up.
Yep,
in conversation.
I'm going to need to know that why. I need to know the why now.
So it's a friend of mine he's elderly and he's going through some medical stuff, and he was commenting on how he just looks like a bag of bones now. He feels weird because I said to him, you just got to get back to some training. You got to get, yeah, exactly, Tim, you ruined it. You got to get back to some training. Here's what you should use. And I sent him a text message with a YouTube video of a shake weight commercial because he had never heard of it. and he was very surprised by what he saw. And as I watched it, you know, Shake Weight, I don't know how long ago that was, let's call it like 10, 12 years ago. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching this minute long commercial on Shake Weight. And I'm thinking to myself, was this guy just messing with us? Like, was that actually a real thing? Did somebody sit there and think, I think I've got a great muscle toning device and actually create this company and actually believe in that? Or was it some guy who was like drunk in a fraternity house with his buddies being like, oh my God, you know what would be so funny? And the joke just kept going. People didn't know it was a joke and it became a real company and they actually sold stuff.
Okay, James, I don't know that I agree with you.
You think that's like a legitimate, worthwhile exercise piece of equipment?
Yeah.
Of course he does. Of course he does.
So why don't you? No, just explain to me why you don't.
For reasons that we can't get into podcast.
No, stop. So James, James,
right. I understand the concept.
No, James, at the gym, you use that black bouncy bow thing all the time.
Body blade. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Same thing.
So this is like a more portable version of that.
Right.
You ever used a shake weight?
I have not. But I know, I know the concept of it.
You record it for
right.
all of
sure.
us.
And the body blade, I think, is actually incredibly difficult.
The body blade is insanely hard.
Okay, well.
I guess here's where it gets sideways for me. The way they chose to market it involved a very specific demographic that seems to be utilizing this particular piece of equipment in a certain way. I don't know. It just
when you Google shake weight and the ad is double hand front and the guy's got it in a vertical position in front of his torso. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You know, it makes me think that the guy who created it was like, I wonder if I can sell these idiots on this idea. And it just sort of went, I don't know. I just saw it and it just reminded me of the whole debacle that was Shake Weight.
I remember when I was a kid.
So it was a little before my time. Did it turn out to be a debacle?
I mean,
I think they were pretty successful.
I mean, I bought Jim
like
Leo
Craig
one.
Fitness.
I bought Jim Leo one from Pit Fit as a birthday gift one year.
This reminds me of I was a kid and we were on a road trip and we stopped at some like general store in the middle of nowhere in Indiana. And they had this wind up toy at the counter and it was like a nun that you'd wind it up and the nun would walk and it would shoot sparks out of the nun's mouth. And it was called Nunzilla. And I think I was like 13 at the time. And I remember having this weird thought of there was probably a boardroom of people discussing this product. Like this had to go through so many different stages of approval to get mass produced and eventually sold. So it's kind of the same thing.
Was it like a nun crossed with?
I think you can look it up. It's Nunzilla.
I'm super not going to look that up because I want to sleep tonight. But yeah, no, it's amazing what like gets through committees and
people are like,
think tanks,
this is fine.
And case studies. It's just bizarre.
So
anyway,
here's what I ask, because James, I think we can dive into this more. The last time we talked about hot dogs, people got us in contact with the president of hot dogs.
If the guy that created Shake Weight wants to come on the show, I would love to talk to him.
And look, I know I'm the producer. Weight. I'm supposed to reach out and get a hold of this guy. I'm not going to do that.
He's
so
not
if you're listening, do
it
for us. You did it with the hot dog guys. Come through for us again.
I you know what? I'm actually okay. I don't even know if I want to know. I think I like the mystery about it better. I think the mystery is better than the story. It's like the mystery of what's actually in hot dogs was way better than the real explanation.
Well, I mean, I think I'm going to just show up to the racetrack with a shake weight.
I'm just devastated that it's past Christmas and
I
11 months.
Instead of people have their jump ropes or their like light reflection machines, I'm gonna just walk onto the grid with a shake weight.
Just stand there in pit lane before practice as everybody's
two of them,
just
double fisting shake weights. Yeah.
Well, you had to say double fisting, Tim.
All right. So family show. So maybe there's a shake weight sponsorship in it for you, Alex. Oh, you've got a new sponsor, Alex. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So it was it.
I yeah. think it's great. I love this.
It,
I love this.
No, it is great. It's so exciting. I am hesitating because I'm going to look really stupid because I don't quite know how to pronounce it.
It's a, yeah.
It's Klosthaler. Klosthaler. Is it Klosthaler?
Klosthaler. It's German.
Klosthaler. It's a non-alcoholic beer. And they have different flavors and types. And I think it's awesome because James, you and I have talked in the past and maybe on this podcast, about how, you know, your dad kind of had some leftover NA beer at your house. And sometimes like during the week when, you know, you don't want to just drink water and you don't want to drink a Diet Coke, like you'd love to have a beer, but like, it's also a Wednesday and you're not going to do that. And you were like, oh, there's an NA beer in the fridge. I'm going to try it. And you were like, it's actually really good. And
yeah.
I think it's awesome because it's got to be better for you than like a Coke.
It has to be.
Right. And it's also just, it breaks
it's just
up.
It's a nice alternative to, yeah, nice drinking alternative water, to water or Coke.
And yes, yeah, if so. You want to send me some, I haven't drank since that whiskey tasting. So I could go for
some. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. You can drink as much of it as you want.
Yeah, you can drink everything he sends you in one sitting and you'll just be, yeah, have to pee a lot.
But feel free to send me some.
I'm thrilled that they're a part of it. And I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, being able to have a nice, cold, refreshing Klosthaler during the hot month of May.
So here's my question though. Are you going to like hop out of the car and crack one?
You bet your ass I am, James.
All right. That's my man. That's my man.
It's like right not there. A great visual, but go for it.
Just getting out of the car and you and I just walk off and just shotgun.
Bruce.
Shotgun.
That would be such a power move.
I love it.
It'd be even better if it's before the race. Just shotgun a beer, take your shake weight out, and then get in the car.
We need them to have cans because I think they're only bottles at the moment.
No, they got cans, but they're tall boys.
Oh, well,
it's even better.
I mean, yeah. Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
So now we know what we're doing on the grid.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yes. I cannot wait. People are gonna love it.
We've covered once again a range of topics from the announcement, which is exciting for all of us and I think all you listeners, the new up-and-coming company Evo, short for Evolution, helping drivers achieve their dreams, shake weights, and Klosthaler beer. So it's gonna be 2021 is gonna be a year, guys. Can't wait.
Thanks so much for listening to Off Track with Hinch and Rossi. Keep in contact with us on Twitter and Instagram. Our handle is @AskOffTrack. Or you can follow us individually. We're @Hinchtown and @AlexanderRossi. If you want to follow Thim, though we have no idea why you would, he's @TheTimDurham. We really need to get that changed to @ProducerThim. The music you heard today is by Ryan Dan of Holland Patton Public Library. Off Track with Hinch and Rossi is produced by Tim Durham. And by that, I mean Thim.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.